Hello, this is Sue Lloyd, Vice Chair of the ISSV, and I'm here today with our Chair, Emmanuel Faber. And we're recording this following our November Board Week, which took place last week in Beijing. So today we're going to talk about the latest news from our work at the ISSV over the past month. We'll give you some highlights from last week's ISSV meeting and then look ahead a little bit to what we've got planned over the next few weeks. So, Emmanuel, a milestone moment for us was when we issued the progress report to the Financial Stability Board this month about the state of adoption of ISSB standards and the state of climate reporting. Perhaps you could start us off with that.
Sure. Thank you, Sue, and welcome, everyone. We have on stage for you an important announcement that we shared during COP29, which is related to the fact that the IFRS Foundation took over the responsibility for monitoring the recording of climate-related disclosures progress when the Task Force on Climate-Related Disclosures, the TCFD, was disbanded in 2023. So what this report is basically telling us that there is a continued strong momentum in the jurisdictional progress towards the adoption or the use of the ISSB standard, and a continued very significant use of TCFD recommendations by many companies, but continued also very limited use or reference to all 11 recommendations. And I think this is, a very good and gives a very good sense of why it was important after the huge work of the TCFD as a framework to come to a more granular, precise, standard-setting approach to the topic. And indeed, already above 1,000 companies referenced ISSB in their report between October 2023 and March 2024. In the adoption, you may remember that We shared during the IOSCO's annual meeting in May 24 that 20 jurisdictions had started their journey. We reported to the Financial Stability Board at COP29 that now 30 jurisdictions are making progress towards introducing the ISSB standards in their legal or regulatory frameworks. Interestingly, this list is first and foremost a very diverse group of jurisdictions from G7, G20, BRICS, EMDEs, with a very significant participation of those last EMDEs being probably close to two-thirds in the numbers of those jurisdictions, which for us is really a source of strength and confidence in the fact that in our standard setting work, and because we've been so inclusive as an effort to make sure that everybody's opinion was thought and concerned from a jurisdictional standpoint, from a profession standpoint, from market participants across the whole fabrication of S1 and S2, we now see the benefits of that with such a wide, diversified, and growing number of jurisdictions actually taking on that work for their own benefits. And interestingly, the other thing I'd say is that that really starts to mean a lot in terms of macroeconomics, because those 30 jurisdictions represent approximately 57% of global GDP, more than 40% of global market capitalization, and more than half of global greenhouse gas emissions. So this shift should result, we can be more confident now in an increase of robust material sustainability related information in global capital markets, as has been the mission set for the creation of ISSB nearly 3 years now. So, Sue, we also published some guidance for companies seeking to understand better the concept of material information in the ISSB standards. And as I just mentioned about the robustness of those disclosures and how useful that would be for the market. Maybe you could share some of these insights into this guidance.
Sure, and this is a really important piece of guidance that we have issued. And a big shout out to the staff who worked so hard getting this done, because it's a really important document to help companies who are in the process of applying our standards around the world. And so it's a really important piece of the work that we've said that we'll do to support the implementation of IFRS S1 and IFRS S2. Because really at the heart of applying these standards, you need to understand what type of information the ISSB standards asks for and what our so-called notion of materiality means. And that's what this document is designed to do. So it really does two things. Firstly, it explains to companies how you make the assessment of which sustainability-related risks and opportunities to report on, and in particular, this notion of sustainability-related risks and opportunities that are reasonably expected to expect an entity's prospects, their cash flows, their access to funding, and their cost of capital. And in so doing, it highlights how those risks and opportunities can arise from a company's dependencies and impacts. So it sets out some explanations on how resources and relationships, such as those that arise from human interactions with nature and social interactions, and the effects on those resources and relationships can give rise to risks and opportunities, and highlights how this two-way relationship is important as a company considers its sustainability-related risks and opportunities that it needs to report on when it uses our standards. So that's the first part of the document. The second part of the document explains to companies how, once they've identified which sustainability-related risks and opportunities to provide information about, and they use the ISSB standards, for example, to report on climate, how you make this assessment of what information is considered material using that term in the ISSB standards. So what information is reasonably expected to affect the investment decisions that a company's investors might make using the information? And in that part of the document, we really emphasise the fact that this materiality notion that we have is aligned with that used by our sister board, the IASB. And in fact, I think in a great example of connectivity, we really leverage heavily the IASB's practice statement on making materiality judgments and use the same steps that are set out in that practice statement to illustrate how a company using the ISSB standards makes materiality assessments. So I really recommend that people using our standards take a look at it. I think it'll be really helpful context to use our standards and to use it well. And while, of course, it works particularly well, these concepts of materiality, for those using IFRS accounting standards, our standards, the ISSB standards, can, of course, be applied with other generally accepted accounting principles. And it's the case that also for other GAAPs, such as US GAAP or Japanese GAAP, these same materiality principles are very much applied. So it's a little ad break to go and make use of those new educational materials. So moving on from educational material to events going on around the world, we've just had a series of COP events. So we had COP29, which just took place in Baku in Azerbaijan, and Biodiversity COP16 in Colombia. So Emmanuel, you weren't there yourself, but maybe you could tell us a bit about our contributions at those important events.
Sure, Sue, thank you. And interestingly, COP15 on biodiversity took place at the very moment where in 22, we were also holding in Montreal a board week. And so conveniently, we opened the finance day of COP15 of Montreal Kunming with sharing the very important aspect in IFRS S1 of how an entity's ability to create value over time depends on its ability to create, destroy, or protect value for others, which meant really this approach of ecosystemic approach of how business is made basically and what the nature of business is. We weren't so profoundly conceptual at COP16, but had Elizabeth Seeger as our colleague board member being present here with an IFRS Foundation team. And it was a great opportunity to meet with key stakeholders in the community as we advance our nature-related work as part of our current work plan and informing that work plan with a lot of stakeholder engagement and feedback. We certainly hope to be providing further feedback on our own work around the end of next year around these super important topics. COP29 indeed was important, not only because we reported on the take-up of ISSB standards and TCFD framework, as I alluded to before, but also because it was a moment important to report the progress we've made so far and the support we provide jurisdictions in order to support their implementation and adoption of the standards. So this was our board member Jenny's turn to be there and share how the message around capacity building, working with our fellow international partners, is critical to ensure that we have trained professionals who can understand what we do, and as a train-the-trainer sessions can then go for capacity building in all the jurisdictions that start around the world implementing our standards. It was also, and because of that, an important forum to connect with the capacity building partners that we are blessed to have as part of the effort that we started already 2 years ago with our partnership framework on capacity building. But then moving from Baku and further east to Beijing, Sue, maybe you could share a bit about what our board meeting has been this month.
Sure. So the first things that we talked about were to do with supporting implementation of S1 and S2, and in particular some matters that came from the Transition Implementation Group, which, as listeners might remember, it has been set up to answer questions on implementation that come from our stakeholders around the world. And we've said in the past that those discussions can lead to further action by us, including the development of educational material, or even, if we need to, proposing amendments to our standards, which would always go through public consultation if we think it is necessary to actually make a change to help with implementation. So we discussed three questions that came up at the Transition Implementation Group in September. And also, because this is the first time that we've talked about potential amendments arising from questions on implementation, we had a discussion, first of all, about the risks and benefits of amending the standards, noting that to make changes to the standards early in their life is disruptive for people. There can be benefits, but there's disruption and it takes time, not just for us, but for our stakeholders. So we do it with caution, but we do it if we have to, as responsible standard setters. And also to agree on the criteria that we would use when we evaluate whether indeed we should propose making any amendments. We discuss criteria about there being a demonstrated need for the amendment and ensuring that any amendment won't result in a significant loss of useful information for investors relative to the standards before any such amendment, and also being necessary to determine that the amendment won't unduly disrupt the ongoing implementation processes of companies and jurisdictions who are in the process of adopting our standards around the world. As part of that, we also discussed the need to think particularly about any effects on interoperability, such as with ESRS or with GRI standards, any effects on connectivity with the information that the IASB requires in the financial statements, and also making sure we don't upset the proportionality, which is so important in our standards. And then we had an initial discussion about the three questions and gave the staff some feedback, and at a future meeting we'll discuss in more detail whether we proceed indeed to act on those three questions. So that was supporting implementation. The other thing we talked about was two of the projects on our work plan, the research projects on human capital and our nature-related project on biodiversity ecosystems and ecosystem services. And we looked at a couple of things. One was looking at information about these two topics meets the needs of investors, and the staff shared their preliminary findings on both human capital and nature, with the information needs of investors based on market outreach and also a review of literature. And then we looked at evidence of investor interest in the topics and how material these disclosures are likely to be for an understanding of an entity's prospects. And we also looked at how existing disclosure standards, such as the work of the TNFD, GRI, Climate Disclosure Standard Board material, which we have in-house, and also the work of EFRAG through ESRS, what they say about disclosures on these topics, so that we can understand if there's materials there that we could potentially build on or that we need to think about from an interoperability perspective. So the staff will use the feedback we shared with them in the meeting to inform their ongoing research, with the aim of synthesizing their findings and analyzing their implications for decisions on future standard setting, hopefully in the first half of next year. We didn't discuss the SASB standards, but that doesn't mean that we're not working on those. Staff are busy behind the scenes doing outreach and analysis on the priority work on the SASB standards, but we discussed the other parts of our work plan at last week's busy board meeting in Beijing. So I thought it was a good discussion. And Emmanuel, while we were there, not only did we have board meetings, we also took the opportunity of being there in China to meet several important stakeholders. And maybe you could tell us more about that and what we can look forward to looking forward.
Thank you, Sue, of course. Yeah, it was important for us in Beijing to meet with stakeholders from China and from the region as well, with the full board being present. Of course, we used that opportunity to meet with a number of our regular partners and stakeholders in China, the authorities that are basically working on the Chinese standardization work in our field. We were blessed at the conference that we organized with the visit of the new DJ of the Accounting and Regulatory Department of the Ministry of Finance, who shared with us that the unified basic standards for China are close to be finalized. So stay tuned with us. That'll be an important moment in the near future. We also met Chinese market participants through a conference of CAPCO, the business association that gathered more than 500 C-suite executives around our topics. We met investors with the China Climate Engagement Initiative for a dinner that gathered investors as diverse as Chinese arms of European investors, so international, but as well as the sovereign funds from China and others, for a very interesting conversation about the need for a global baseline and what it would actually mean in terms of their own capital allocations for more resilient business models in China and beyond. And then the IFRS Sustainability Beijing International Conference took place with absolutely amazing numbers of audience in the millions and millions that gathered, interestingly, a lot of the main jurisdictions, regulators of the region, such as Hong Kong and Japan, Korea and Singapore, in addition to our Chinese hosts. We heard from speakers from large corporates, China Construction Bank, Standard Chartered Bank, and others, for a very fruitful discussion, which I would say and summarize in a nutshell as showing how much Asia is an epicenter of the momentum for the adoption of the ISSB standards, as we've seen from the very, very early days. So it was a multifaceted program of work for this week, and a very good one indeed. And with that, and we'll be in Frankfurt for our board week, and we'll update you by then of our progress. Thanks for being with us.
For the latest developments from either the International Sustainability Standards Board or the International Accounting Standards Board, make sure to subscribe on the IFRS Foundation website, www.ifrs.org. If you enjoyed this podcast, please take some time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player.